Hello and welcome. Scare track. Scare Track Podcast. Welcome to the Scare Track Podcast, the UK's first podcast dedicated to the scare attraction and haunted house industry. However, please be advised that we have no censor. The language used may be of an explicit nature and is not intended for younger listeners or the easily offended. All views expressed are those of the individual host and do not necessarily reflect those of Scare Track, our guests, or any of our associates. So, if you're still here, let's get scared.
So this is where our adventure begins.
Oh my God! Ah! I'm scared myself!
Kate Monroe is screaming. Spoiler alert, freaking awesome.
The
quality of the set was amazing.
Oh, I don't like it.
Hello and welcome to the Scare Track Podcast. My name is Mikey and today's episode is a movie review discussion on House of Fears, the 2007 horror thriller film. Now, once again, I am joined by Dan Brownlee from UK Haunters, and just to warn you, there may be some heavy spoilers within this episode. So if you've not yet seen House of Fears, I advise you go and check that out before you listen to this review episode. If you're here in the UK, really nice and easy to watch. It's on Amazon Prime. It's free to view, so you can go and check it out. Really nice and easy. But for now, let's take you to the episode. It's our movie review of House of Fears.
You're listening to Scare Track.
Hi folks, and welcome back to this episode of the Scare Track Podcast. Like I said in the intro, I am joined once again by Dan Brownlee. Dan, how's it going, buddy?
All good, man, all good.
Good stuff, good stuff. It was about time that we did another one of our movie reviews, and today we are discussing House of Fears. It's a 2007 American horror film directed by Ryan Little. It came out here in the UK in 2009. It's currently on Amazon Prime, so you can check it out now, guys. Myself and Dad have just watched it, and there's going to be lots of spoilers in this discussion review episode. But overall, I really quite enjoyed it, Dan.
Would you say it was released 2009 in England?
Yeah, UK was 2009.
I'm not sure when I saw it, because the thing about England is, in America, you tend to get Fangoria, etc., and Horror Hound, all those magazines, say, this film will be out and so-and-so, and you go, oh, and it'll be out. When it gets to England, we kind of have like a scattergun effect when it comes to non-studio films, especially horrors. So much stuff will slip so under our radar that I can't remember when I saw this, but it was a long time ago, so I may have seen it comes out. Probably was Blockbuster still around then?
2000, maybe, yeah.
Blockbuster or Love Film? Because I sure as hell didn't stream it.
I don't know. It must have been Blockbuster now. I can't remember when Blockbuster closed.
Blockbuster, one of those things. But yeah, it was definitely a random find. I hadn't heard about it. I'd just sort of gone, ooh. This is quite interesting. And I think it's actually the first horror film that I saw of the haunt horrors where I actually went, oh, they're actually using the fact that it's a haunt as the gimmick. Like, it, rather than Tohuba's Funhouse, where it's in Funfair and there's like a haunt in there that they're running around, and this one actually used the fact it was a haunt as part of the scares and the story and stuff.
Yes, definitely. I'm sure we'll get on into it a little bit later as well, but you're exactly right. Like, it used each room to its advantage. It used the characters to the advantage as well. They weren't just, even though, again, the similar sort of thing of a bunch of teenagers going to check it out. It used their own fears against them rather than it being just a generic sort of a scare or kill. So it was kind of cool the way it did use the haunted house. You're right, definitely. Also, as well, it's worth noting, like I say, there is spoilers. This is different to many of the haunt horror subgenre films that we've watched. This is, it's because it's a spiritual being that doing it, really, isn't it? There's no guy who's a specific slasher or killer, or there's no crazy killer, you know, killer scare actors in there, or crazy lunatics. It is basically an artifact that's been found, isn't it?
Essentially, Pazuzu from The Exorcist.
Yeah, I'd take that. Yeah, basically.
When it first opened, I was like, why didn't I pick up on the fact that this is just massively homage in The Exorcist?
That's a good point, yeah.
It is. Even the style of the figure, it's not the same, but, you know, it's that same sort of art style, for lack of a better term.
Something that you have on some, like, someone's collection of weird artifacts around in random places, in like a dodgy thrift shop or something. So but that was, you know, that was bought over to their haunt, and it ended up in their haunt. And
it seems to the point where they had the excavation in what I presume was meant to be Africa.
It's
not scene for scene, but it's definitely scene for scene. It's the same basic setup.
In somewhere a Middle Eastern country, or, you know, somewhere very sandy and hot, an ancient artifact, you know, that's been hidden away is found. It makes its way to a haunted house in the US, and it continues its wicked ways of killing people, really.
Quite funny. You know the woman who finds it?
Yeah.
Who's on the, when they go first go into the attraction, they say, who's that? Go, that's the woman who owns the place. She's playing herself.
How do you mean?
On IMDb, it says the actor's name, and when it says a character underneath, it says herself.
Oh.
So I'm not sure if House of Fears is actually a place that she owns, and maybe that's how they got to shoot there, because...
That would be pretty cool.
I couldn't find anything when I was doing my limited searching, but... Yeah, I was like, she's playing herself? What? So, I don't know who she is. Do you know? Is that...
No.
What, was she big in the American horn scene that maybe we just had no idea about? Or, you know. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
That is a weird one. It's, you know what, though? If the sort of idea that we've come up with now is that it is her horn and they're doing a film on it, that's pretty cool. I like it. But yeah, that's, I didn't know she was playing herself. But it adds another, adds another dimension to it. Again, if we might be able to dig further and find out more information. Sydney Neal.
There was one, wasn't it? Sydney Neal?
Say that again, sorry?
Sydney Neal?
Was that her name?
I think so.
I don't know. Let's have a look at the cast.
Heard of names. She's not got a picture in IMDb.
I might do some research into that, have a look. If there's a part two to this... mini review, it's because I've gone and done some more research and we found out loads more information. But the film as a whole, she played a cool part. She found it and took it back to what I'm guessing was her haunt. You know, it got back there. And then shit just goes down, really, doesn't it, Dan?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's the best way of putting it. I mean, it starts off like a haunt fan's dream, where essentially it's like, oh, look, the boss is away today and we've got keys to the haunt. You fancy go checking it out? Which every haunt fan would be like, oh, fuck, yes.
Yes, exactly, definitely.
Jesus, yes.
Yeah, it would be so cool. I mean, I'm quite a geek. You're like me. You do all that. You do the RIP tours at Halloween Horror Nights and the behind the scenes and stuff. I like going in behind the scenes of haunts here in the UK. We've done it at Europa Park as well. It's just cool and fun and geeky to be able to see the other side of it, isn't it? So you're right, yeah. I mean, it starts off at a party and, you know, it's all these teenagers are deciding to go.
Random fact for you. Who's the guy? Is it Gerard Padalecki? The big guy from Horn, who was also in Gilmore Girls.
I am really not good with names. I'd know his face, which is no good for a podcast.
Supernatural. You know, it's the two brothers.
Oh, okay. Yes, yes, yes. Ah, yes, yes, yes. I know now.
He's just randomly in the party. Like,
yes, he is, yeah.
But says nothing. But the thing is, he was in Gilmore Girls and he was in Supernatural. He both started by then. I don't think he'd done any films, to my knowledge. I mean, I could check an IMDb, but I didn't. But he's kind of just, it's like, pops up, almost pops up like a little later on. He'll be the one who fancied someone or someone's boyfriend or... And, you know, he'll pop, but he didn't. He kind of just popped up as if, oh, he's going to be someone later, and then topped it off, and that was it. Just never heard from him again.
Oh, madness, yeah. Just a weird cameo, really.
Yeah, it was.
Speaking of Sydney Neal, I've done a little bit of research here as well on good old Facebook. But a former owner, producer and director at Rocky Point Haunted House.
Wow.
She was the owner from 1986 to 2007. So I'm guessing if we put a few ties together, I'm guessing they used Rocky Point Haunted House for the film.
Yeah, well, if she was there only until 2007, maybe it like was shutting down and they sort of went, hey, man.
Maybe so, definitely, yeah. And obviously I'm checking, I've got four mutual friends with them all in the haunt community as well, so I'm pretty certain I've got the right person, for sure. Just a quick editor's note whilst I'm doing the editing of this episode. I've done a little bit of research now, and everyone in the US who have probably been shouting at their devices for the last 3 minutes, apologies. Done some research on Sidney Neal, a big player in the US haunt scene, big time. So much so that in 2016, she won a Lifetime Achievement Award with the HAA, the Haunted Attractions Association. So definitely a big player in the game, and apologies on myself and Dan's behalf. But obviously here in little old England, we weren't fully aware of Sydney's work. So, I'm going to do some more research, though. But for now, back to the episode.
There's this sort of horror, which I love, where you just kind of fuck off reality.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. Like,
yeah.
The animatronics start running around. Well, they're not even animatronics. I did the same thing in the film I did, Tombs, where the mannequin comes alive. They don't have joints to speak of. They don't have, you know, they're solid bits of plastic. But as soon as something evil possesses something, it can run around and do all these things, and you're completely happy with it. Like, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
I'm cool. And every now and then I sort of sit there and go, this is absolute nonsense. But you just don't think about it. Or like when the girl dies, one of the first girls to die of a fear is suffocation, which makes no bloody sense.
Mm.
She gets stuck in a room that fills up with sand. You're like, where the hell did that sand come from?
Yeah. But that was, I wanted to mention that. That's one of my favourite scenes, because although it's like batshit crazy, like where's all this sand? Like you say, why is this happening? But, and if it was a slasher film, I think we'd have more beef with it. We'd be like, that slasher has not bought in a big dump truck of sand. But because it's more spiritual, supernatural, you just go, oh, okay.
The things that's happening. Bent the rules a bit by the fact that mannequins and animatronics had more stability and movement, but it did conjure up things that just flat out weren't there, like the guard gets attacked by his dog. The dog was there. You know, people getting attacked by certain things. The things are there. The sand? And the thing is, not only did the sand, it's like tons of sand come from nowhere, when it's draining, you've actually got a shot of like a drain in the floor?
An actual drain, just, yeah.
Why did you have that there?
Who's built a drain just in case this film fills up with sand? Yeah. There's a drain there.
But at the same time, you know, oh, right. Someone had this great thing. I did a short film, which is the first film I ever got any money for, which I think is hilarious, but probably people think it's a lot of crap, called Bear Scary. And I wanted the bear to transform.
Right.
And I was like, I don't know how to get there. What's the logic behind it? And someone said to me, which has stuck with me throughout my entire filmmaking career, there doesn't have to be a reason. There just has to be a reason.
Right. Okay.
And I was like, okay. So essentially, the babysitter gets pissed off with the kid and throws his teddy bear out the window. So that's a reason. But why is it transformed? It's not. Is it magical? It doesn't matter, Dan. The reason is it got thrown out the window. It doesn't matter if it's a logical reason. It has to have a reason. And it's the same sort of thing with this. How did the sand drain away? Oh, well, there's a hole in the floor. Okay, cool. And that makes no bloody sense, because why was a hole there? But the fact it's gone, oh, there's a hole in the floor. You kind of go, oh, cool. All right, that makes sense.
Yeah, you can't just let it happen.
Let the fact it magically appeared from nowhere with a bunch of extra zombie hands which weren't in the room either.
True.
Let all that go, because they've given you a little slice of logic which shouldn't have been there in the first place. And it's just one of those magical bits about horror films I love so much.
Yes, it's just that, just an element of disbelief, isn't it? And I think some films allow you to do it more so than others. Like, I'm the worst for it. Sometimes I'm like, I don't like that because of X, Y, and Z. But really, whereas other films like this, I could have gone, I don't like that because there wasn't a zombie in there before, or there wasn't sand in there before. But there are certain films that just sort of let you go, yeah, Cool, yeah. Cool. Yeah. It's going to happen. That was scary, so it worked.
But I found it kind of interesting. I think I'd like to, we should actually do like a history of haunt horrors, like when they actually started. Because I can go back to the, I believe, was it 70s, late 70s, early 80s, where Tobe Hooper did Funhouse, and see how haunt horrors progressed. Because with this one, now don't take me for bait on this, because I'm kind of making wild swings here. But it, to my knowledge, it's the first one I remember where it was actually using the gimmicks of the haunt to such an effect. It kind of seemed like it almost didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
So was this one the first ones? Because now you've got like Haunt and Hellfest, it is smooth.
Yes,
they find all that out. But this one seems to be where they almost didn't quite know what to do with what they had.
Yeah, no, I get that, definitely.
It's like fears. Like, some of their fears kill them. Some of them don't.
True.
Some of them are a bit just kind of, you know, they mention and nothing comes of it. So even though, I mean, again, this sounds like a moan, it's not, it's a fantastic film, but it just kind of feels like they don't quite know how to utilise everything they've got. So I'm feeling that this may have been one of the first of its kind.
Yeah, definitely. And the fact that, you know, is, you know, back over, you know, 10, 12, 13 years old now as well would suggest that too. And I think it also gave... how am I trying to get my words out here? They kind of used their knowledge of haunts in a very much, we know this information, so we're going to shove it in the film. But I liked that. So
yeah,
there when he said, we've filled this place with animatronics, because we've got animatronics, we need less actors. I was like, yeah. Well, yes, that's exactly right. And the way he switched each room on, again, you know, most haunted houses, that would be the same way. You'll have the, each room has its own bit, has its own e-stop, then it shows you a trammel, which is in, you know, lots of scare mazes, haunted houses, the tunnel. So it kind of just used what it knows as a haunted house, a scare attraction, and kind of just cut, copy and pasted, let's put that in the film. And to me, it made it quite authentic, to be fair, in certain ways.
It's like stuff like they went above the scenery at one point. And they found, at one point, these all have hidden doors. Let's find a way. Don't go through the maze where the animatronics are getting us. Let's go behind.
Yes.
So, you know what I mean? I'd really like to be right here. It makes me sound so smart. But I really feel this is the first one that really started properly utilised. Not just there's scary things, that are creepy things that can make you jump in here, but they really started using the actual thing, like the whole, the ins and outs, the behinds, the ups and downs, rather than you can be running through a scare maze and things are going to come alive and attack you. That's, you kind of use the logic of you can go behind it where there's nothing. They kind of, you know what I mean?
They definitely use their set to their advantage, more so than even maybe later haunt horrors do, definitely. Like you say, with climbing above, you know, above the sets, or at one point they're like in the security office or in the maintenance room where they grab a circular saw. Like, those sort of things would potentially be there, you know. It is you know, if it's a standalone haunted house that opens and circular saws, I've said it before, I'll say it again, they're terrifying, man. They need to be used more in haunts, definitely.
And also they use a circular saw to cut through the haunt wall because it's plywood.
Exactly.
Well, there's no way we can get out. Yeah, we can. I've got a saw. This is plywood. I'm going to cut a great big bloody hole in it and escape. You know, I mean, there's a lot of... It's like the way we praise, like, Haunt and Hellfest, like these little nice little touches. It's kind of... It's the first time that I remember seeing that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
With, oh, there are... It's actually scenery, you know? It's not just... Because when I first knew about Haunts, I thought it was just constructed this one thing. I didn't even think it was behind the scenes. And it was all plywood. I thought the building was constructed that way.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's amazing what people do with theming, isn't it? And the theming, again, I'm a geek with these films because I like to, the more of the haunted house, the more of the attraction I see, the happier I am. And that there's, you know, there's great films that show real good, you know, specific scenes of the attractions. And this, for me, was just sort of haunt fodder for that, you know. It, like I said, even when he was switching on all the rooms, you just get, you know, visuals of there's a mummy room, there's a ghost room, there's a this, there's a, they even at one point, you know, taking this even further, of them using what they've got, like the actual haunt, the set, they even explained the Pepper's ghost effect and how it's done and how it scares people. Like, it's, you know, it's semi-documentary. Like, you know, it was, that was really, really cool. I like that.
Yeah. There's a lot of very nice touches to it. But again, kind of they almost like they didn't quite know what to do with it. I do that. One thing I always notice as well, which I find quite funny, because I've done this with my film, is that whenever you set a film in a haunt, there's also always a period of time where someone has to sit around chatting because you can't just walk through a haunt because they're not an hour and a half long.
Yeah.
It always happens where you've got to sit there for a bit and just chat because
you're going to be in and out in 10 minutes otherwise. And nothing's going to happen. You've gone in, you've gone out, and that's it. But I suppose, just what you were saying earlier, this sort of backs this up in the fact that they're there on their own accord. They're not there as the haunts open, like other Hellfest and Funhouse Massacre. You know, they are at these events. They're going through these attractions whilst they're open, whilst they're operating. It gives a very different dynamic compared to this one, where, you know, one guy even works there. So, yeah. And that makes you, the best way to put it, it makes you dislike the characters less. Does that make, like we've said every time we're watching these films, they're cool films, but it's just the annoying teenagers that deserve to die, basically. Yeah. That we're like, well, they're being a bit dickish. And this one, don't get me wrong, there's a few of those cliche characters that you are going to get and expect from it. Some are more annoying than others. But they actually do have permission to be there. He has the keys. There's one guy that's doing the voice. He's really into it. He's loving it, you know, and he's one of the first guys to go, bless him. And so again, that gives it, this film, that slightly different dynamic to the to most haunt horror genres that we're watching, I think, anyway.
Although Jess did point out a hugely problematic thing with it when there's the two guys, and he's like, oh, what, should we swap dates? Jess was like, no, he fucking can't swap dates. How about asking their goddamn permission? I was like, shit, yeah, you got a point.
That's the point. They just let it happen.
Yeah, it was so used to it, and especially like 90s horror films, it was such a thing that happened. You're like, oh, right, it's a bit dickish, but whatever. Yeah, she went fucking nuts. I was like, yeah, you're not fair fucking play. Definitely. That should be. I mean, I don't think they'd do it now, but it was such a thing at the time, and it actually was a trope which no one really questioned.
Hmm. That's a good point, actually. I didn't think of it. You know, I watched it with Hannah as well. I watched it a few months ago with Hannah as well. She didn't mention it either. We just didn't pick up on it.
Yeah.
But again, I suppose you just put yourself into that moment of disbelief. And sometimes when you want to say something to each other, you kind of just don't because you're like, well, it's a film.
Well, it's like a moment of, we're going to probably get killed, so pricks anyway.
Exactly, yeah. It's a bit like, I'm trying to think of an example and I really can't now, but you'll watch a really, really, really far-fetched film, like something that's really crazy, never going to happen, really screwed up. But the thing I don't believe is, hang on, how fast did he get to that hospital? Because he lives about half hour away. How's he managed that? Like, the rest of the film of aliens abducting people and probing people and doing this, and, do you know what I mean? I'm just making a film up as I go along. But all the madness and craziness of a film, I can get on with that. But how the hell did he get there that fast? Do you know what I mean? I just pick up on the stupid things.
My dad had this thing where he said, a film has to stick to its own reality.
Yeah.
And it's when that reality breaks. And the same sort of thing. This film's reality is, there's a giant goddamn lizard trashing the place. I've bought that, okay. But then if you start going, oh, we're going to quickly drive to Scotland, to England, it takes half an hour. It's like, no, this is not a time travel film. And I mean, I bought into reality laid up.
Yeah.
Got to kind of play it safe for the rest of it.
Yes, yeah, definitely. It's got to carry on that parallel.
Don't give a monkeys.
Yeah.
In fact, I was watching the Crystal Lake Memories, a documentary of all the Friday the 13th films.
Okay.
And that's someone's biggest problem was, they were like, at the end when they've drugged Jason and they're taken him to Camp Crystal Lake, how far did they get there? Because they're in suburbia and they've got to travel to some arse end of the forest anywhere, and they did that in like, what, half an hour? No. And I was like, yeah.
That's a good point.
Undead killers and dream demons, I was fine with, but.
Exactly. It's that, isn't it? It is.
Half an hour, you're like, yeah. No, that's not going to fly, man.
It's true. It's true. It's the things you pick up. It's like, I do it with Disney films as well. I'm like, no, I completely understand that the toys wake up when Andy isn't there, but how the hell did they get out of that dumpster? Like, do you know what I mean?
Do you know what's really fucked up? If a toy in Toy Story World dies, which I presume they can do because there is dread and fear of the toys dying.
Of course, yeah.
That means that for the rest of their life, they have to see the owner play with them and their friend's dead body.
Wow, that's grim.
Yeah.
That's really, really grim. Wow. That... I don't know if I can go on with this episode.
And another one's dead, and there's basically, they go, hey, Woody, and there's his dead flopping body moving towards him, and Woody's just there.
That's screwed up, man. That's
going down his cheek because he can't actually cry because he's a toy.
That's definitely going to give me nightmares.
Weird, isn't it? Yeah. Also, another thing, I saw quite an interesting post about Toy Story. You know, in Sidrum, we can go on forever, like the fact that his carpet's the same carpet as in The Shining. But you know... Yeah. The one with two legs and a fish hook.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a hooker.
Yeah, I saw that, actually. That's a good point. Yeah, it's a hooker. It's smart, isn't it? Because it's got, like, sexy, big, long legs on it. I like it. I need to watch Toy Story 1 again.
Do you know what? We'll get off Toy Story, but there's one more thing. Because we're on haunts. In China, Disneyland China... On Halloween, they actually do haunts in Disneyland, and there's a Toy Story one full of the messed up toys in Sid's room.
That, take my money.
How badly do you want to go through that room?
Really, really bad. I bet that was incredible.
And it was that baby thing.
Yeah, with like the spider baby.
Giant one of that, and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to have to YouTube that now.
Do it.
Toy Story haunted house in China. Mm-hmm. That's
them. In Disneyland as well, like Disney. Because I don't think China Disneyland's actually owned by Disney. I think the Chinese government bought the rights, or the Chinese company bought the rights to use it.
Yeah, something like that.
Half, but in China, I think they just bought the rights to do it. It's obviously more complicated than that, but like Disney doesn't directly own it, so they toy it.
That's incredible. I'm struggling to see anything on YouTube. I might have to do a little bit more digging. But I'll do that when we're not recorded about House of Fears.
Yeah, just found one, so I can get a send it to you. But it's definitely... I've seen a video, and I was literally like, take my goddamn mind. Because they did a Nightmare Before Christmas haunt as well.
Nice.
Yeah, and I was just like, again, take my goddamn money.
Definitely. I need to get over there. COVID, bugger off so I can go and check it out. So we can go do loads of things, let's be honest. Right, let's wrap up on this this House of Fears. I'm just going through my notes here just to see if there's anything that I particularly...
I quite liked is... Again, this is what I'm saying about them not... I kind of feel they weren't quite sure how to really fully visualise or materialise what they were trying to get, because the whole thing of their fears... They all say their fears at the beginning, but they don't all have a comeuppance.
Yeah, that's true, actually, yeah. You know? Yeah,
but
definitely.
There's nice little things, like, you know your lady with your jet black straight hair?
Yeah.
Her boyfriend jokingly said to the, I think it was the blonde white dude, the one who owned the place.
Yeah.
She said, oh, what's your fear? He said, looking like you. And in the next room, he got done by a mirror gag.
Yes, he did. Yes.
And I was like, that's pretty bloody clever.
Yeah.
Because he didn't, it wasn't a ghost in it. It was like a two-way mirror that suddenly changes. But he said his fear was looking like someone and the mirror gag got him. And I was like, because that's some top-notch shit. And that's one of those little touches.
Yeah.
That, you know, this director knew what the hell they were doing.
Definitely.
That would have probably gone over a lot of people's heads. In terms of what his fear was about,
mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, not everyone's fear had a comeuppance to them. So it's kind of like it's almost like they're just like a needle prick off, absolutely nailing it.
And yes,
it's a really fun film, and it was just that just so close. I mean, I've seen it plenty of times, and it's one of the reasons I said watch it again. I'm quite happy to watch it again. It's a really good film.
Definitely.
And if you haven't seen it and you're a haunted horror fan.
Go and watch it, definitely.
Yeah, it's just like, that's what I'm saying, these little things where they hit such beautiful points and then they kind of just seem to miss
it with certain deaths, isn't it? It's like they hit it with some of them, not all of them.
And that's what I'm thinking, maybe this one's the first one. So they weren't quite sure quite how to get it right, how to handle it all. But yeah, it's still very good. But I do like the stuff like when the Scarecrow is chasing the group, or mainly the girl within the group, who's afraid of scarecrows.
Yeah.
You've got the security guard messed up there, but the Scarecrow doesn't touch the security guard.
No, just going for her.
Then the dog comes after and gets a security guard. So it's like, it's kind of like only their fears can kill them.
Mm-hmm.
But then
there's some that,
I think the Scarecrow then kind of went for someone else. So you know what I mean? It was kind of like just ever so slightly mishandled at times.
Definitely.
But it was quite interesting how there were these little touches that just really like the dog, like the Scarecrow going, vroom. Oh no, the guy's not scared of Scarecrows. He wouldn't get him. But the dog did. And the guy getting done with the mirror gag. There was lots of very nice little touches on top of all the nice touches about Pepper's ghost and the fact that how haunts are constructed and the fact they have safety doors to get out of the haunt.
It was
good watch now. I've seen it a few times years ago when it came out.
Yeah,
this is the first time I've watched it since watching so many haunt horrors.
So you can sort of compare it
And pick it apart a little bit more.
Definitely. I'd say I sort of looked at it more of, like I said earlier, enjoying the fact that you mentioned the way they do Pepper's Ghost, the fact that they've mentioned that we have more animatronics so you need less actors, you know, those sort of things. Like you mentioned earlier, using the circular saw to cut through the wood, because that's what you can do in a haunt. You know, it's not made of stone, you can get out of there. And those things I really liked. I also like the fact that you, and every film would do it once or twice, but it's normally a bit of a crap gag. But there was actually some decent scares from the actual animatronics within the attraction.
Yeah.
So, and it, you know, it scared the person, it scared the audience. But what it did this time, rather than any other haunt horror film where it's a good gag and people laugh at it because it's like, ha ha, a skeleton scare me and whatnot, this one actually hurt the girl. Like, it was the room that was trying to kill her, you know. So it's cool. It's cool that it definitely used the haunt to its advantage rather than using just characters within the haunt, if that makes sense. Like, used that as well, definitely. I think, other than that, I really quite enjoyed the Killer Clown scene just because I really liked the visuals of the haunt. It reminded me very much of Contagion or the Clown Maze at York Maze Hallow Scream, which had the awesome sort of 3D effects on the wall. So it reminded me of that, which I quite like that scene as well. And obviously as the film goes on, it gets more intense, there's more kills. And I think, without giving the whole sort of thing away, that's everything I've got in my notes. I really enjoyed it, so much so that, you know, I watched it again today to check it out again before we did this little review episode. Have you got anything else in your notes, Dan, or have you got any sort of random facts for us?
I haven't got any random. I couldn't find any random facts in this one. Although, did you watch the end credit sequence?
I didn't, no.
Ah.
Oh, I need to. I've literally, like, it's on my telly downstairs, still on pause, looking at the credits. So I can press play and watch the rest of them in a bit.
A mini found footage sequence of a year later.
Oh, I need to check that out then.
Oddly enough, kind of very abruptly finishes. Like, the thing is, like, the last minute thing is a couple of minutes long, or maybe even not that long.
Right.
But it kind of doesn't wrap up. It's almost like they had a 5-minute scene and they were like, no, we'll do that for the sequel. Just cut it there. Yeah. You get what's happening.
Yeah.
You don't even have to bloody watch it to get what's happening. But there's a little sequence. I'd actually be very interested to find out what the next haunt horror film after this was.
Yeah, actually. Like you say, we need to do a little bit of a timeline.
Hmm.
Well, I've got the list of all the haunt horror films that you sent me a while ago when we first started doing this cool little review podcast series. So I need to go through that list and just date them all, really, don't we?
Yeah.
And
I'd be really curious if the next one, if they sort of not learn from this one's mistakes, but kind of like, there weren't mistakes in this at all. If they saw this one and what they built upon it, I think is what I'm really trying to say. If they in a completely different direction. Now, if the next one was, I can't think what I'm talking about. But you know what I mean? Whether if it was, if they tried to clone this one, mm-hmm. if this one was successful enough to clone, or if it was influenced, or if it was completely different, or if they said, you know, this one didn't get a sequel, so maybe it didn't do as well as they wanted, so we'd do something completely different. Yeah. I'd be interested to see the next haunt horror along and just see what they picked up, see if they learned. Yeah.
And see how it sort of progresses as well. I suppose it's always difficult to, obviously, some films will have bigger budgets and things like that, which you've got to take into account in a certain respect. But when it comes to just story and design, the way it's told, I think that could be quite interesting.
Handled and that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, man. Awesome.
One thing, which I think is one of the most important things to ask when we're reviewing haunt horror films, mm-hmm. would you go through the haunt?
Yeah, man.
Yep, me too.
100%. It looked awesome.
It would be bloody awesome. And it looked like, and the thing is, it looked like a year-round haunt.
Yes.
So you kind of assume they've really got their shit together because mm-hmm. they've had to fine-tune it as they go.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, it looked really, really good. It looked, the fact as well that one of the characters, he gets killed quite early, but he sort of gives you an insight of what it would have been like in the, you know, during a run, like he puts the voice on, he goes, "Welcome to the House of Fear." You know, it was cool. I'd definitely do the haunt. It looked pretty cool. Definitely,
cool.
Man. Awesome. So I think that wraps us up for this episode, discussing House of Fears, the 2007 horror film. Dan, a huge thank you for joining me once again.
Yeah, it's a pleasure as always.
And we'll chat to you soon.
Cool. Catch you later.
Cheers, buddy.
Unlocked Vision, proud sponsors of the ScareTrack podcast. UVE are a multi-award-winning themed attraction and design company, providing bespoke themed attractions, theming, events, and experiences. Contact UVE today by visiting unlockedvision.com. Now, let's return back to the show. And remember, let's get scared!
So there we go, folks. First of all, a huge thank you to Dan for coming on to the ScareTrack podcast. Really do appreciate it. If anyone knows horror films, Dan Brownlee from UK Haunters is the guy. So I'm really glad I've got him onto the ScareTrack podcast as a guest host now. Likewise, I'm very excited I've got Jess and Polly on a ScareTrack guest host as well. If you want to find out more about them, just head over to our website, scaretrack.co.uk, and click on their profiles. You'll find out more about Dan, Jess, Polly. And of course, you've got mine, Hannah's, Kate's and Martin's profiles up there as well. So it's a nice big team now, and hopefully being able to bring you even more content throughout the year, especially at Halloween as well, because we're all dotted around the UK. So hopefully lots of exciting stuff coming in the next 12 months. And of course, we've got our new ScareTrack approved badges as well. For more information on that, check out our social media pages. We are on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, and Facebook. Just search for ScareTrack. But a bit of information, it's basically to give the events, the attractions, the experiences that really, really, really blow our minds. Don't get me wrong, we can go to amazing haunts, amazing attractions, amazing experiences, still have an absolutely 100% amazing time. It won't necessarily mean that they get one of these badges. One of these badges is if they've been, they thought completely out of the box, have gone above and beyond, have done something completely new we've never done before. Those sort of things, guys. So, yeah, very excited to have our ScareTrack seal of approval badges out there. And we gave our first one to Hourglass Escapes purely for how amazing their rooms were in a virtual capacity. And their Evil Dead 2 room really has just knocked it out of the park for us. So, yeah, that's a little bit of information about that. ScareTrack, we're growing, we're getting bigger, and we're going to have more movie reviews coming as well with Dan from UK Haunters too. So, with that brings us to the end of this episode. A huge, huge thank you for listening and for all your support. I really, really do appreciate it. But for now, let's get scared.